Well, the end of the month means a quick look back at Michigan's top news stories in state government and politics to help us drive that discussion. No, this is not a driverless vehicle. Veteran Capitol correspondent, host of Off the Record on Michigan Public Television, Tim Skubick.
Hey, Marky. How are you?
Welcome back. Nice to see you. And Emily Lawler of MLive. Welcome back, Emily.
Thanks for having me.
For better or for worse, a lot in the Lansing area came to a halt back on the 19th for a few hours for Donald Trump's visit to the summit in Diamonddale. The Lansing area visit was, I believe, the first of several rallies where Trump tried to appeal to African Americans. Let's listen to part of that appeal.
Hillary Clinton would rather provide a job to a refugee from overseas than to give that job to unemployed African American youth in cities like Detroit who have become refugees in their own country.
And that whole discussion has continued almost unabated ever since Lansing. Did Donald Trump's message begin to change on his Lansing visit, Tim? Did you read it that way?
This thing is changing by the hour. What time is it?
Yeah.
You know, it was startling in the fact that he took about 15 minutes of a 41-minute speech to talk about, courting, if you will, the African-American vote in a community that is 98% white, a little town called Diamonddale, which is not exactly an urban center. So it was interesting. The venue was unique, but it was also vintage Donald Trump. His message was very clear. Look at folks, you got nothing to lose because the Democrats have not done anything for you. They take you for granted. They come around and court you when it's time to vote. And then after we vote, they forget about you. And so, you know what? What do you got to lose by going with me? The African-American community did not take it well. They thought maybe they were trying to be used. But look, there was a hidden agenda in also what he was doing. I think he was also speaking to more independent and moderate white people who say, you know, well, maybe Donald Trump isn't a racist, quote, end quote. He is reaching out, and that's appropriate. Does he get a bunch of African-American votes? Probably not. But he's making the effort, and he's underscoring his belief in this effort by coming to Detroit on Saturday.
Emily, what'd you make of the Diamonddale visit?
I talked to a couple of people who kind of had that perspective, you know, white attendees who came out of the rally thinking like, you know, this is a guy who's trying to reach out. He's trying to make everything equal for everyone. That's an American ideal. So I think to some extent that worked. But, you know, it's funny because like Tim said, it's a predominantly white town that he gave that speech in. But, you know, the bookends of his visit to Michigan, he had been to a Detroit Economic Club or Economic Club luncheon, mm-hmm. something like that, earlier, a week before he came to Diamonddale. And then this week we're expecting him to visit Detroit again. So it's an interesting venue for the African-American
pitch. Well, it's interesting to consider the next visit to Michigan. He's got another visit to Detroit planned for Saturday, where he'll appear before a predominantly African-American church and then interview with the bishop of the church on the bishop's radio program about...
I think it's a TV show.
A TV show. It could be. I'm sorry if that's...
There is television, Mark. This is sort of like radio with pictures, okay? I'm sorry to correct you.
But you know race and ethnicity will be a part of a large part of the discussion. This sounds like an extraordinary setting. What do you make of this upcoming visit?
Well, where better to go? I mean, there is a tradition of Democratic candidates going into church on Sunday, putting some money in the plate and getting a chance to talk. There's some nip-gnawing going on now as to whether he's actually going to speak to the congregation, and that will be interesting. But let me just backtrack you to the two previous appearances where he's been accused of being tone-deaf. He went into the Detroit Economic Club and basically beat up the city of Detroit as being a disaster because of Democratic policies. Well, if he had read the papers, Detroit was in bankruptcy and is coming out of that and looking pretty good. Okay, so he goes to Diamonddale and he declares the economic section or the manufacturing section of the economy in Michigan to be, quote, a disaster, excuse me, which is somewhat counter to what Governor Snyder has been telling us and Republicans. So here's two instances where he comes into the state, delivers a message which is out of sync with the Republican message in the state as they're trying to win elections. It's a total disconnect.
Getting back to the courting of African-American voters, it's been pretty widely reported that Trump's numbers will not elect him unless he makes inroads with other groups where his support is weak. In the end, is that what we're seeing here?
I think so. I mean, I think that his comfort zone is definitely white males. Older people tend to support Trump in greater margins. And, you know, there's also some talk of less educated people to the extent that that's a demographic. But, you know, I think that when he's looking to court the African-American community, he's outside of his comfort zone, right? You know, when he first came to Michigan during the primary, for instance, I covered him at an event in Warren that was largely like blue collar workers, factory folks. I think that's kind of his base, his comfort zone. And he's expanding outside of that in Michigan and nationally.
And he also tried to basically apologize for some of the things he said in the past. But we talked about this earlier. If you say to your wife, "I regret that I did something," Mark, is that an apology? The answer is no.
No.
Okay, no, it's not. You have to say, "I'm sorry." He never said, "I'm sorry." He just didn't. He can't bring himself to do that. And that was designed to appeal, I think, to some of the female voters out there who have some concerns about him with that regard. Now, if he were to say, "You know what, I'm sorry that I said my comments about abortion, okay, I'm sorry that I said this," it might help him to move a little bit. But I don't think saying that he regretted saying stuff got the job done. And he's only done it once. He hasn't repeated it on the campaign trail. And as you know from watching politics for years, you have to continually repeat your message over and over again so that it sinks in with the electorate. This was just a walk-by, and I don't think it did any good.
Tim Skubick, Emily Lawler, it's Current State's Month in Review here on 90.5 WKAR. One more Trump question, and I promise we'll move on. We saw Governor Snyder continue to avoid Trump as a topic, even though he's been asked about it a number of times, including by you last week, Tim. Will Rick Snyder stay out of this all the way to November, or could he eventually announce support for Donald Trump?
Next question.
How hard is that to visualize?
I don't think he would ever announce support for Donald Trump. You know, I think he's been... He's been adamant in being out of it for this long. I don't know what the advantage would be of jumping in it, you know, kind of too little, too late. So, you know, I'd be interested to see if he did do that, but I don't think it's really on the table. And I think the closest he's really gotten to any discussion of Trump is, you know, kind of saying that Trump's characterization of the manufacturing sector as a disaster didn't exactly line up with what he was seeing in Michigan. So, you know, the closest he's gotten to Trump as a subject was not really a positive.
What is there to report recently from Michigan Democrats and their candidate, Hillary Clinton?
Well, they're hoping that she does well. I think that eventually Michigan will not be in play. I think a couple more polls that come out showing her up by 8 or 9 points could be the end of the Trump juggernaut coming into Michigan. In fact, I don't know this for sure, but I got a feeling that this visit to Detroit may be the one and only.
Yeah.
Unless stuff starts to turn around, because there's only so much money, there's only so much finite time. And you don't take somebody to a place where you don't have a chance of winning. I'm not saying he's out of it in Michigan, but he's got a ways to go. It's an uphill climb. And the Democrats are very happy to have Trump at the top of the ticket because they think in other races that will help them out. So the D's are quite happy. Look, she's got her own problems. You know, if you look at the polling data, which we've all looked at, she's not very popular either. So this clearly is the lesser of two evils, and one of the evils is going to win.
Meanwhile, Attorney General Bill Schuette wants a firewall of sorts, for lack of a better word, between the state human health and services personnel and Flint health officials as they work on Flint water. What's this about?
Well, you sound like you've been reading confidential orders. but I think late last week, last week at some point, it came out that there was a secret court order that had been sealed by a judge that was issued to kind of limit communication between the State Department of Health and Human Services and some local agencies in Flint, including the Genesee County Health Department and then also McLaren Hospital. And DHHS is fighting back and saying, well, wait a minute, you know, there's this active question of Legionella. They've got cases of Legionella that they're trying to investigate, and they're saying, you know, we need access to some of the information that's put off limits to thoroughly address the public health crisis.
And is the focus of this Bill Schuette, Rick Snyder? Is that
the
focal point here?
I think the media tries to do that, and it does sort of fit that narrative. But what is going on here is that the governor's point is that if his local health, if his officials can't talk to the local health officials about the Legionnaires' problem, that the people are at risk in Flint, and Mr. Schuette's people, taking note of that, went into the secret document and changed it to address the governor's concerns so that supposedly the state health officials could talk to the local health officials, but the governor's office wasn't buying that. So they continue, and now they've trotted out a doctor today who says the people are going to be at risk if our local officials and our state officials can't communicate. So you've got a back and forth in the courts. The governor says he doesn't like the lack of transparency. He'd like to see the court order. But this is part of the back and forth between these two gentlemen who are Republicans and tend to disagree on a number of issues.
So could you argue then these moves by the attorney general are a thinly veiled effort to distance him from a hobbled administration of the same party?
I'm not sure how hard he needs to try at this point. I think he's done a pretty good job differentiating himself, winding up on the opposite side of a lot of court cases. Going back to maybe the representing the retirees in the Detroit bankruptcy was kind of a divisionary point. So, is he perhaps getting farther and farther away from the administration? I think that's a fair conjecture.
Mr. Schuette would say, I'm just doing my job.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just doing my job.
Let's move on to the confusion at the State School Reform Office. We've been led to believe that the SRO could close many dozens of Michigan schools due to chronic underperformance, but the process has continued to baffle administrators and some number of elected officials as well. Some say they're in the dark. Can you help us understand what's going on
here? Well, the rollout of the announcement got everybody's attention because the word 100 schools was thrown out, not a couple of dozen. And they had to sort of begin to walk that back because they weren't going to do that yesterday. Okay, there's a process involved here. And so I think the school reform office probably could have done this a little better by laying the groundwork for such an announcement. There was no need at that point to say anything. And then when it was said, it scared everybody. And now the administration is trying to walk this thing back and clarify that the schools aren't going to be closed tomorrow. The part that I loved about this, the school superintendent who used to have this reform office in his shop, okay, and probably had a little tighter control over it, has said, I had nothing to do with this, folks.
Yeah.
Okay, I know I'm the top educator in Michigan, but don't point your fingers at me because I had nothing to do with this.
We've also been led to believe that in just, pardon me, just a few days, tomorrow I think it is, after it has a chance to crunch the brand new M-STEP and SAT test data, which just came out yesterday, by the way, the school reform office would release an updated list of chronically underperforming Michigan schools. Is that list still going to happen? That's an annual thing, as I understand
right.
it.
Right. I think it happens regularly. It might be legislatively required.
Well, Mike Flanagan traditionally went before both education committees in the legislature and put the list out, and there was no crying and gnashing of teeth like we're having over this. So the data will come out.
Well, and part of the problem, I think, with the rollout of the potential closures announcement is that the list wasn't out yet. So, you know, schools who have maybe been in the bottom 5% for 2 years in a row are saying, like, well, shoot, are we on it a third year? Are we even in danger of this? Do we have to worry?
So. Yeah, do you get the impression we have an important office that is kind of making its way in terms of how it conducts business?
Well, the woman that runs the office was a candidate for state school superintendent, so she must know something about education. I think some people in town have a question, does she know anything about how to coalesce around an issue, and it has caused some problems to the point that the governor made a statement last Friday to kind of come in and clean this mess up, to say that we're going to release the list, there will be transparency, and we're working on this, but no schools are going to be closed immediately.
I just get the impression of an office that knows it has authority, but isn't quite sure how to use that authority.
Well, and don't forget that it recently, or I guess last year, was moved under the Department of Technology Management and Budget and out of kind of the Department of Education
right.
umbrella. So, you know, it might be a communications issue between education community and this office, or just kind of the effects of being plucked out of a department where education is all they do.
Can we also comment on the test scores that came out? Do you have a second for that?
Absolutely.
This is an amazing rollout yesterday. The lead was 2/3 of the students are more proficient this year than they were last year. Now, on the surface, how does it sound to you?
Great.
Yeah, it does. Okay, that means if you score 24 out of 100 on the score last year, and you moved to 26, you now had improved.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is there was one grade, the fifth grade, in the entire state of Michigan that reached 50% proficiency. Hmm. All the other grades, 3 through 11, flunked the test. Now, please be aware, the Education Department does not like to use the word pass or fail or flunk, that these are diagnostic tests to help us learn how to teach our children better. Mom and dad who are sitting at home want to know, did Johnny and Janie pass the damn test or not? Mm-hmm. And most of them didn't, pardon my French.
So many ways to spin the
It was a nice spin, though. And some people, some in the media actually got sucked in by it and said, hey, 2/3 of the students did better than they did last year.
This month, Attorney General Bill Schuette rejoined the fight involving the straight ticket voting ban. And this was the week before last. He wants this controversial measure that was signed into law last December reinstated. Where does this sit right now?
Yeah, basically in court is the short answer.
The Sixth, does it sit in Sixth Circuit Court?
I believe it's still in the Sixth Circuit Court, yes. Yeah. So, you know, going back to kind of the rationale behind implementing this law, you know, Republicans who pushed it and ultimately signed off on it said kind of, you know, this will force people to flip the ballot over, look at nonpartisan offices, and also kind of consider candidates individually and not based just on the party. Whereas Democrats said, hold up, this is going to create really, really long lines. We're not sure what the effects will be. And also, there's some thought that Democratic voters may use the straight ticket option more often, so it could be a disadvantage to Democrats in the
long run. It should be noted that 40 other states have a ban on straight party lines, so it's not unique in that regard. But Emily's right, the D's do say this is another part of a pattern of the Republicans to depress the vote. And of course, the Republicans would disagree, but we have that back and forth, and the Sixth Circuit could make a decision. I talked to Mark Brewer, who is working on this case, former Democratic Party chair. They said if they lose it at the Sixth, in all likelihood, they will go to the U.S. Supreme Court. Mm. But the clock is ticking here. September the 9th is the deadline for deciding what's on the ballot and whether this is in or out.
Emily, you covered the Democratic convention, state convention, last week. What did you take away from that?
You know, it was kind of low-key. There was, a set number of delegates who were voting on candidates for things like the State Board of Education, university boards that are elected popularly, and then Supreme Court candidates. So,
did you encounter the woman rumored to be the Democratic candidate in the 8th District by any chance, Susanna Shirelli?
Yes, she spoke at
She was there.
She spoke, and I thought she did a really good job, actually. Her speech was really, really concise, and I think that she kind of went into her background a little bit and growing up working at a family diner and how hard her parents worked. And, you know, I think that people were definitely listening while she was talking, so that's a good first step.
At the Republican gathering on the same day, one longtime Republican from Dearborn, Bill Runco, said of Donald Trump, if we don't elect him, we don't elect anybody on this ticket. Tim, what are you hearing lately about down-ticket Republicans in Michigan races?
Well, there is a concern. They don't like to talk a lot about that because it sort of gives more legs to the story. But the Democrats are pumping this thing pretty good. Particularly, you also have to put this, Mark, in the context of the straight-ticket voting, that it's an up thing for the D's if they can get straight-ticket voting as it affects the bottom of the ticket. But look, there's concern that Trump's not going to do well, and some Republicans may not show up at the polls. I'm not sure I agree with that, but there's danger here, and they need 9 seats in the House to take back control. And I would say the Democrats have a shot at that. It's not a foregone conclusion they will, but they're in the hunt.
They made positive noises of this at the convention, of course. They think they can flip the House.
Yeah, of course. And they would need 9 seats to flip the House. And the other thing is Trump could be a drag on the tickets in some areas of the state, but perhaps a boost to the ticket in other areas. There are some competitive seats in Macomb County, for instance, or Northern Michigan.
I want to thank both of you for joining us here today. It's Current States Month in Review. Tim Skubick, thank you. Emily Lawler, best of luck, and thanks to both of you.
Catch you later, man.